There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. Hey, everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29th, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30th, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1st, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at themeateater.com. Hope to see you at the show.
I'm KC.
And I'm Tyler.
And you're listening to
The Elephant Podcast.
What is happening, all you woods people? Apparently, you know, the woods can be many things, all right? It ain't just the tall trees.
Well, many things,
but
too.
But it's all those places that deer can live. And you know what? First Light Gear will get you covered in all those places, hey, right? Brought to you by First Light Gear.
Cover you like a studio light.
That's right.
Doing your first video podcast.
All the lights. This is the first time we've videoed the podcast, guys. And, well, is it not?
Mm-mm. We did a camo breakdown one time.
Oh, yeah.
That's we didn't true. Have a whole lot of First Light at the time.
We did not. No. We were broke down.
I had a
then.
Little bit, though. I had a little bit.
So this is first time in a while, at least, and I'm uncomfortable. So it should make for a great podcast.
Do you need me to take over?
Yeah, do it.
Okay. Now, so what we're going to talk about today is a subject that's kind of near and dear to what we do. Generally speaking, this is what we love to do, and it's finding new places to hunt. We're going to talk about how to scout for them, like map scout, right? Mm-hmm. And then how to hunt them. And we're going to throw out a bunch of scenarios and ideas like that you might encounter, or that we have encountered, or that we could expect to encounter. If you have any thoughts or ideas about places you'd like to see us talk about more specifically in the future, you can definitely comment below on the video or send us a DM on Instagram or something like that, an email as well through the website. So anyway, there's some of that going on. You know, we just ran through our first leg of the buck truck. Many of you have been asking where it is this week, and what is happening is we're moving some of these videos.
It's parked outside.
We parked it outside. No, it's parked right now. Currently, the first five episodes are parked on Meat Eater's YouTube channel.
Ooh, I see what you did there.
And then the other ones are parked in the hard drives here, right here. If you could see this on the video, you can't. There's about 5,000 hard drives here. That's where those are parked. And they're going to end up on the Meat Eater channel at some point, but I think that's going to be more towards like September, more towards hunting season. So we're kind of holding off for a little bit and letting some people get their fix of, you know, I mean, case if you got a bunch of mountain lion loins hanging around in your freezer, now you know what to do with them, you know? So until buck truck, you'll be probably doing some more cooking and stuff.
And but. So all of this that we're about to talk about today is essentially what we do before the buck truck takes off, like months beforehand,
That's pretty much.
You know, like pretty much from right now, even earlier than in the year than this, most of the time earlier in the year than this, we start establishing places we would like to go hunting and figuring out all the logistics behind that. And, you know, there's going to be stuff like where you stay and all that stuff that matters too. But we're really going to focus on how to find the hunting stuff, right? How to find the deer and what that looks like. So, Tyler, in general, this might even be something you don't have written down in the notes. So even wider than this.
Okay.
You're the best at this.
Mm-mm.
How do you decide you want to go hunt a place?
For me personally, I'm trying to go shoot a big deer. Mm-hmm. That's what I like doing.
Well, yes. I'm not going to disagree with you.
We cook these things. We cook these things.
Oh, my goodness. Are you serious?
I know that we like big ones, but we cook them too.
Yeah.
Just so you know.
Well, big deer means more meat.
That's exactly right.
That's exactly right. That,
I mean, neck roast.
That's right.
Let's go.
The neck roast. You also have, I'm going to hunt a new state every year goal.
Yeah.
And you still are on that, right? Did you violate that?
I don't think I did
year?
Last year. That was the first year in a while.
Well, you hunted a new state for deer. Just not whitetail last year. You hunted Colorado for deer.
Well, I hunted Colorado in 21. Killed a whitetail there.
Headgummit.
I know. It's starting to get tough. Because yeah. Not that there's a lot of states left, but there's, you know, if you think about it, if you go out east, there's a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And so I don't necessarily want to just go get in the mix with a bunch of dudes. You know what I mean? And so I don't know. The east thing isn't super – it's not really on my radar as much. I want to do it. I would like to, but you know, there's a lot of variables there. So I haven't been out east, but then so as far as like north goes, I got to go to Canada about near at this point to hit a new state.
Mm-hmm.
So and I've tried to draw some tags. I wanted to go to Montana this year. Of course, that's getting real hard to draw these days. So I didn't get a tag there. But I'm definitely looking at, like I said, places that maybe I can have a little space. And I don't have to be fighting against the fellow hunter as much as I am just fighting against the deer and maybe the terrain and some of those things.
Mm-hmm.
I want to shoot big deer, but at the same time, I love shooting a 115 in a cool place, man, mm-hmm. you know.
So you're looking for places a lot of times that don't have as much hunter pressure. So mm-hmm. we'll just kind of leave it at that. And that's kind of hard to determine sometimes until you go there.
Mm-hmm.
But I know you said big deer. Do you find that those big deer line up in places where there are large quantities of deer too, or are those inverse functions, or how does that work out?
I personally think that there's two ways that you can get big deer. One is in like a low density area. If there's also just, it's remote and there's not hunters there, you'll get big deer because of age. And then I think personally that also where there are like very big numbers, large numbers of deer, you'll have deer that, I mean, you know, in 7 billion people on earth, there's a shack. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, like, if there's only one.
Yeah. It can't be replicated.
You know, there's 5 dudes in this room and none of us are even close, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you have a big enough number of animals, there's going to be like deer that are just going to weigh 250 pounds and going to have more points on their head, mm-hmm. you know, than the rest of them normally do, even at like 3 years old. So those are kind of my thoughts. Like if you go to Iowa, there's going to be some of the biggest deer in the world, but there's also just deer everywhere. There's mm-hmm. so many, you know, and those are two things that kind of line up, which is, you know, because they limit hunting pressure.
Specific area too of the Mississippi Plain as well. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of factors going on there. You can go to a place like, you know, I don't know. Let's just say Central Texas. There's probably more deer per acre
mm-hmm.
than Iowa. And you're not going to find anywhere near body size or antler size.
No.
So it's like there's a lot of things that line up there. You know, often I look at it where, you know, high population densities usually mean smaller animals. And the further south you go also means smaller animals. So I'm trying to reach up north a little bit and find bigger animals.
But you get to the brush country and things can change.
Yeah,
you know?
There's anomalies
to
that
really,
for sure.
It really mostly, I think, comes down to how much food is on the landscape.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, in that hill country area, there's probably just not like a ton of food during certain times of the year outside of corn feeders and some of the other things that are being fed down there. So, I mean, there's enough for them to eat, but it's not like, it's not the type of food that they need to grow big. And mm-hmm. also, like you said, south, but, you know, I know people that hunt way down south on the border, right? And they've got 250-pound deer down there, mm-hmm. but they're feeding them like high protein stuff as supplement. So, you know, if you're looking at going to travel, you're looking at hunting a public track or maybe, you know, getting a lease, but you're probably not hunting at a place that's been having cottonseed feeders for 10 years now. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it's going to be a little bit more different than what we're talking about here. So
how much do you enjoy a challenge whenever you go on these trips?
I don't enjoy it much, actually.
So, yeah, here's the thing is you want to be a novel, astute individual and say, I like a good challenge, mm-hmm. right? Because we're told that, like, it builds character or something.
Yeah.
Well, at the same time,
I think the challenge is making fun. $400 to go spend on a deer tag and then another couple hundred in gas.
And figuring out how much gas is going to cost because you're having to do new calculations every day, right? Because price increase and
groceries,
inflation.
Man. I mean, you can buy 2 boxes of cereal and a gallon of milk and walk out of there and break 100 on it, you know what I mean?
That's kind of our thoughts. I like to go shoot deer too,
yeah.
right? So, but if you're like, say, new to this, how much emphasis should you be trying to put on, I want a challenging experience?
Man, it really is like, what do you want? But don't listen, I mean, don't listen to the guys that are always trying to say, you know, how hard their deer are and that they love a challenge and kind of beat their chest about it. Mm-hmm. These guys get to hunt a lot. A lot of them do, right? So, I mean, as you get to do that or as you kill a bunch of deer, mm-hmm. a challenge maybe is what you need. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
I think you can find challenges within the hunt.
Sure.
But also set yourself up for success.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very silly, especially if you're a married guy, to say, babe, I'm going to sacrifice time away from the family. I'm going to sacrifice some income and maybe put myself in danger to be out on the road. And you know what? I'm going to make sure it's a hard thing to do. That way I don't come home
yeah,
with something.
I'm going to go to the Wisconsin Big Woods
yeah,
and just
exactly.
make sure I see 3 deer the whole
yeah,
trip.
That's you right. Know? You know, and so there's this concept of, hey, let's go break it in a little bit, go somewhere there's a lot of deer and shoot something. That way 3 years from now, you don't come home with something and it's like, ah, you know, you got one last year or mm-hmm. whatever. You know, like there's a happy medium there to overuse something.
I mean, and honestly, like, you know, if you want to create challenges for yourself, you can do that locally a lot of times, right?
Yeah.
But when you go to travel, like, I mean, I can promise you, when I travel, I wanted to kill a deer.
I guarantee you.
And come home and be like, yeah, I did what I went out or set out to do, you know?
How hard is it to kill a deer with a bow, Tyler?
It's hard enough.
It's almost like it's a challenge.
It is. It's a challenge.
How about that?
And that's the thing. Like you know, and that's one thing you get and you have to think about when you go mm-hmm. to do this stuff. But like, if you want more possibilities, then hunting with a bow gives you those possibilities because they have extended seasons because it's a challenge, mm-hmm. right? But dude, we said this a bunch in the last couple of years, but dude, if we had rifles on some of these hunts, I mean, so many big deer get
just
shot.
Might do it this year because, you know, it's almost at this point in time, it's inverse. I haven't shot a deer with a bow in a while. So, I mean, a gun in a while. So it's going to be kind of a challenging thing to do just mm-hmm. to pick up a different weapon, you
yeah.
know, but if you do want to open up opportunities for yourself, a lot of these states have, ample opportunity with archery equipment, but are limited with firearms. You know, some states don't even allow rifle hunting at all. So you might even be looking at getting a new type of weapon, shotgun or muzzleloader or something to go try to hunt some states. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's something to think about as well. And I don't know, if a guy is establishing goals and that sort of stuff, I guess they should think about how much it means to them and what method of take too, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you want to go make sure you kill a deer. Well, if you can go somewhere you can carry a rifle, you got a real good chance.
Guarantee you, mm-hmm. man. I mean,
shooting a deer.
I just think about, first of all, if you bump a deer with a bow and he runs another 40 yards and turns around and looks at you, there's a high chance that deer is 60 plus at mm-hmm. that time. which is just not a shot most guys are taking, and it's a hard shot period for everybody, yes. right? The deer's jumping.
Especially when they're on alert.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot different. You see a big-bodied animal at 75, and it's as close as you can get, and if you feel good about it, then, you know, that's your own prerogative. But you bump a deer that's at 20, he runs 50, and all of a sudden he's at 70, and he's looking at you.
Yeah.
It's not a good scenario.
Or in a different scenario, you might have a gun, you bump him at 70, he runs to 150, and while you're putting, while he's doing that, you're putting your gun on your bipod, and when he stops at 150, you just smoke him.
Yeah.
And guess what? He didn't jump the string one bit. You know what I mean?
That's
so
right.
it's just such an, not to say don't do it, or not to make a light of like a situation. It's still deer hunting, and it's still fun, and it's still somewhat challenging, but like, the bow thing makes it pretty exponential. So, you know.
Well, all that, there's a lot of challenge involved in the stuff that we're not covering as much, too, of the travel.
Yeah.
Of finding a place to hunt, you know, finding animals that exist, which we will kind of cover a little bit. But, like, dude, if you've never been out of state, I don't care if they give you a nuke. Like, it, you might have a little bit of a hard time figuring out a new area to hunt, you know. Like, it's... it is not easy to like cross that boundary when it comes to hunting, you know. Like, in fact, I'll talk about it because he's our good friend, and he wouldn't mind at all. But our buddy Brian Bostick traveled out of state for the first time this year in Nebraska and had some good hunts, but it was not easy for him.
Yeah,
you know, and because of a lot of extra factors too. He had some family stuff he had to leave early to go address, and that's the thing you run into. When you go out of state to hunt, it's a lot different than running up the road to your cousin's 40 acres that he lets you hunt, you know, and you'll be home for dinner. You know, it's just a completely different scenario.
Well, and you know, that's the I went to Michigan this past week and just kind of on a little short vacation. And dude, we walked a trail and I was like, I don't know what any of this stuff is. I mean, from a flora perspective, you know.
So bring up Brian again, who you were talking about the other day. So that sun hemp or whatever it is grows wild up in that country. Well, he thought he found a field of marijuana and was like, we're about to get shot out of here by whoever's growing this,
well,
you know.
And, you know, he's calling cedars pines, so we're having trouble helping him on the maps at this point, you know. I don't see any pines on this map, sir. But, you know, that's the thing is the flora. A lot of guys, and I got asked about this on a live video recently on Instagram, but I think guys don't put enough emphasis, and you don't hear anybody, you know, talking about this on podcasts, I don't feel like, or videos or whatever. I don't hear guys putting enough emphasis on the flora in certain areas and what that knowledge base can do for you. You and I mean, it's more than just like finding deer or food for deer or whatever, or cover or whatever. You and I you can like see a deer glassing and be like, you know, over there by that blue stem, and I'll know what the blue stem looks like that time of year and to look for it, you know, 3/4 of a mile over there or whatever. And so we can even help each other quickly locate deer by the flora that we both kind of know, you know.
We ran into that with Garrett the other day whenever he's here hunting pigs. I was telling him, you know, we had stalked up on some hogs, and I was not guiding him. He was plenty capable, but I was with him. And we were trying to coordinate the camera stuff, and I was like, hey, shoot the one that's going to come out by that palmetto, which is a mispronunciation of the actual thing. Anyways.
It's kind of like Colorado.
Yeah, Colorado. he didn't know what a palmetto was, but he's a woodsman and figured it out pretty quick. He's like, oh, he means that pokey green thing that looks different than everything else, right? So, like,
and that's where Humpty Dumpty was created, man.
Oh, y'all see that? Was it? Is that February?
That'd be later, closer to the new year.
Sometime in the winter of 2024,
cool,
I'd imagine.
Video.
Yeah, there'll be a cool video out of some hog hunting and stuff. But yeah, it makes a huge difference to be able to identify plants. And tell you the truth, there's just some like learning curve to this stuff. Like you don't know what you don't know. So it's pretty hard to travel to Wyoming and be like, oh, that right there is a Western honey whip or whatever it is, you know, like you don't know what these plants are until you get out there and experience it a little bit. But at the same time, if you spend time locally concentrating on your local deer herd, seeing what they eat, maybe figure out some families of plants, you know, like you can recognize, oh, that's an Asteraceae. That's a forb of some sort that the deer will eat. Oh, that's some type of cool season grass that they're not going to touch. You know, like there's all this kind of stuff. In fact, this past year in Nebraska, you can see in the buck truck, we are hunting deer around some yuccas. And they're not the same kind that we have here, but they have pods just like yuccas do, and we know that they're yuccas. At the same time, I don't know if this made video, but Eric and I had a discussion about what alfalfa looks like and how it's actually kind of like a clover. And you get down and look at it, it's not a grass. It's got these petals or these leaves on it, you know? So, like, understanding what clover looks like when you see it, it might not be the arrow leaf you're used to at home, but you can know, hey, that's something that deer eat.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure. I mean, and that just whole, the whole thing, even, you know, obviously the trees are something that a lot of people like to at least know reds and whites, right? It's real basic, but I mean, we talk about the different types of oaks that drop different types of acorns that are set up. I mean, that's one of the only ways, you know, or one of the, there's not like a ton of ways in North Texas or East Texas to figure out how to kill a deer at any particular point of the season. And that's one of the ways that we started with this whole thing, was like trying to understand how, when they're eating these acorns and stuff. But, you know, those, it's important, and I don't hear a lot of people talking about it. So it's something to learn.
That's a good
you
point.
Know, when you travel, another thing you kind of got to be, keep in mind is like, you want to be realistic. And what are your, I mean, how do you set up expectations when you get ready to travel?
For me, I like to dream. So first off, I try to look at the biggest deer I can find on the internet that came from the area. And that gets me really excited. And then I start to compare that to my personal wants and needs. And there's sometimes when I'm like, dude, I would just love to shoot a deer here. Like, it would be a lot of fun to go shoot a deer. And I was that way a few years back in South Dakota. You know, that opens up a lot of targets for you whenever you feel that way. And then, you know, you might be a guy who's like, you know, I've killed some really nice deer at home, and I really don't want to go out and shoot a younger buck. I want to shoot an older buck. That's fine, too, but you have to come to the realization that those are a lot rarer, especially on states that usually allow a good amount of out-of-state hunters. You know, that public ground is not going to have, often not going to have, a great age structure, you know? So you might need to look at that as well. And then I also, and this is completely against what you may have heard, but you probably heard me say it, I will shoot something different on the last day than I will on the first day.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely will I do that. You know, like, it's just, it's a little foolish to just hold yourself to one standard the whole time. In my opinion, I'm not calling you fools if you do this, but, like, things change. You have new experiences. There's new variables that come in. You know, maybe all of a sudden you realize there was a huge EHD outbreak and you didn't know about it. So all of a sudden, all the mature bucks are gone. Or, you know, maybe that's not a great scenario. Maybe you realize the hunting pressure is a lot worse and there's been people in there hunting already. And or maybe you get COVID and you're just happy to shoot a deer when you really were trying to hunt a big deer. You know, that happened to me a couple years back and I shot a deer and I was just elated about it. Right. So there's all these things that kind of come into play.
And if you set yourself up for like, hey, I just want to shoot a deer that looks like this, say, you know, an 8 point, right? Remember when we were hunting, when we produced the video called Nameless? Remember what I was wanting to shoot during that trip?
Yeah. And I was like, Tyler, don't do that.
I was like, man, if I could just see like a 2-year-old.
That was interesting. And I'm glad you listened to me on that. But at the same time, maybe I shouldn't have interfered with you because that you were the hunter and that was your decision. And, but you were like excited about it.
Well, the thing
well,
is,
maybe
like,
you might have been like, man, should I shoot that? I don't really remember for sure.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. Hey, everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29th, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30th, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1st, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2nd, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4th, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5th, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at themeateater.com. Hope to see you at the show.
Yeah, but I don't. I probably asked. I tend to do ask hard questions like that. but dude, when I shot Nameless, I nearly jumped out of the tree. I was so excited, you know. Yeah. And that's what you get when you shoot one bigger than what you kind of expected to kind of come away with. Which, so setting yourself up for that is
also
fun too.
Lets you hunt a lot longer if you decide you want to shoot a bigger deer. You know, I in South Dakota a few years back, I tried to stalk the smallest mule deer you've ever seen. I mean, like a 0.5, but he had some antlers. He did. He was so little. And if I would have killed him, that would have been like day two, and then I wouldn't have learned or done anything while I was out hunting. Instead, I got to hunt to the very last day, and I shot a big deer with a really heavy arrow and fixed blade broadhead, by the way, in the shoulder, and didn't find him.
You learned about heavy arrows?
That's right.
Heavy arrows?
I learned to not aim there. Anyways, I think that is something, too, that I probably would kind of like to address is that there's this big emphasis on learning when you go and do stuff like, oh, I just want to learn about the animals and this and that and the other. How do you feel about that? Honesty time.
I love learning.
I do, too.
I love learning, man. But I think that I love figuring it out.
It's a means to an end.
Listen, you can walk around all summer for about near free on all kinds of public lands and just see stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Great stuff. Like the coolest stuff. But you can't kill things. You can't hunt on those places most of the time. If you're out there with a $400 tag in your pocket, I ain't just trying to learn. Mm-hmm. I ain't just trying to sight see. Man, yeah. I hope y'all can understand what I'm saying right now.
They can read your lips because they got the cameras now.
That's right, yeah. I'm trying to get something to take home with me in my truck, not just a memory, not just a sight.
Yeah, I think there is a lot of value to learning about the deer and how to kill them. And it's okay if you go, you know. For instance, you've been the guinea pig a few times for some of these out-of-state hunts. You'll go somewhere and then talk me into going the next year, and one or both of us will kill a deer.
We still fail.
Yeah, or we'll fail. Yeah.
No.
But have a lot of fun. But the bigger point is that, like, sometimes it does take a few years to get it figured out to where you can go kill. Mm-hmm. But now there's some states that, like, I still don't know if we'd kill something if we went back. And then there's some states where it's like, all right, we're going on year 2, 3, 4 here, and one of us is coming home with a mature deer.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. I feel good about
that. And it's not necessarily like a spot. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there are spots, but like, it's not necessarily a spot as much as it is a, like, we figured out they do this in this country because mm-hmm. of this flora and this agriculture mm-hmm. or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. So, like, some way that these deer really, like, deer are deer. And so that helps us across states to know that deer are going to do these certain things. But in some places, like, they're going to go this way, or they're going to eat these yucca pods, or they're going to, you know, they need this water in this country particularly more than they do in other places, or they will eat Milo here where they've got plenty of other stuff in this other state, so they don't really eat Milo, you know, mm-hmm. or hang out there. So just some of those different things that you learn along the way that help you in that state later on, not necessarily because of a spot, but because of certain things that you learn. It's like the turkey hunt we went on in New Mexico. Like, we started to learn things about what those birds were, what they were, where they were going to be roosted, and what they were doing during the day, and some of those things that we didn't quite know before we ended up hunting that country, you know. Mm-hmm. So definitely, you know, as far as your expectations go, you have to understand all these things we've talked about with, like, do you want a particular size of deer, or does size matter much to you, or do you want an experience? Do you want to hunt a challenging hunt where you're hunting, you know, in the mountains backpack style? Because that's cool too, you know. You might want to backpack hunt a whitetail, which doesn't get done very much. That would be cool too, you know. You may just want to experience open country and not see too many guys or mm-hmm. whatever. So you're hunting early season in a state, and you can probably expect that you might not shoot a deer, but you might not see very many people because they're going to wait till the rut to hunt that stuff, or gun season or whatever. So once you get all these expectations figured out, the one, you know, you've mentioned this, but one of the things you need to really understand and expect is that a big deer, like a 3-year-old plus deer, is going to be a hard thing to kill. They're hard to find. There's not a lot of them. And then, you know, once you have come to terms with, like, these are the things I want out of a hunt, you may do some research. You may find a region or a state that you want to hunt. And then what do you consider after that? And how do you narrow it down to an actual place that you're going?
Well, I've probably already pulled out the Onyx maps before this, mm-hmm. but I think that this is really where you're going to spend a majority amount of effort on a mapping system. And you're going to be looking at, like, what the actual public land availability is in certain regions of the state. There's multiple layers you can look at that on Onyx, you know, and different types, BLM, state, national forest, all that, you know, stuff to consider. And then resources, you can do that as well. You can look at what the ag crops are in the general area. You can look at water, things like that. And you got to have ground to hunt. So that's probably the next big point of, like, if you find a region of a state, let's say, you know, you split a state into quadrants. What's a Iowa, they don't let you go there very often, right? Mm-hmm. There's certain units or whatever. Let's just divide a state like Iowa into quadrants. Mm-hmm. Say you decided you want to hunt the southwest portion of Iowa, which would be a terrible choice. I'd never go there. Mm-hmm. But you'd have to then look in the southwest area and say, okay, what portion of that is there actually an amount of ground that I can hunt, mm-hmm. you know, because we've looked at it in some other states too. And you're like, oh, this looks pretty good. And then you get to look at it and you're like, oh, you can't access state ground in this state. Oh, fun. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're telling me that all this public ground right here actually is county owned and you can't go to it. Great. So, like, things can start running out quick. You don't want to plan a trip to a state, which we've done it recently, where one wind change can make it to where you don't have a place to hunt,
mm-hmm.
because it's an hour and a half to another parcel and you don't know if there's not 13 people there.
Yep.
You know, so it'd be real easy to waste your time on a spot because you have high hopes for it, but there not be a practical amount of land to hunt there.
Yeah. I think another thing that I would consider when I go to kind of narrow down a region or whatever of a state, I would think about how I like to hunt deer, or how I hunt deer well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can kind of, like, some guys, you know, they understand early season pretty well because maybe that's the way they grew up hunting, was that style of kind of bed to feed stuff. Some guys might hunt the late season better because they understand how bucks relate to food late season, particularly in like the time of day they might come out or what conditions might make them come out in daylight in late season and stuff. And some guys, you know, a lot of guys just like the rut, and I don't blame them at all because that's my favorite time too. But, you know, in the rut, there's specific ways you'd want to hunt too. And so you got to kind of consider these things, like when is my hunt going to be? And what portion of this state, if I have options throughout the state, it's not just like a region specific tag or whatever. What portion of this state kind of lends itself to that? Like, am I going to, you know, am I going to want to hunt deer moving around corn in like during the rut or pre-rut or something like that? If that's the case, then maybe you want to look for a bunch of bean fields on the Onyx crop layer, because at least in the Midwest, a lot of times you get a year-over-year rotation that's corn, beans, corn, beans, corn, beans. So everything that was in beans last year will be likely corn this year. So that could help you a starting point for, you know, if that's what you like to hunt. If you like to hunt late-season beans, then maybe you'd look for a place that had a lot of corn last year near it, you know, and you can hunt deer moving to those beans in the evenings late season or whatever. So just to kind of think about those things, that's a good way to narrow down. Also, if you like, you know, if you grew up like we do hunting creeks in East Texas or whatever, you might want to be on a creek. So look for a place that has either a river system nearby or a bunch of creeks that flow into that river system or whatever.
It's a good thing to look for no matter where you're
at in
the country.
Yeah, in general, for sure. That's good country. And you're going to have more public around that country a lot of times, too. So some of the things you might think about there.
Thinking about limited resources, too. If we're talking about kind of moving into your points there. If you go to Mississippi, you probably aren't going – now, you may, but you probably aren't going to be like, you know what, I'm going to find – a water hole, because there's not a lot of water around here. The biggest river in the country, the second biggest river in the Western Hemisphere, touches that state, which means there's a lot of drainages from it, which means there's a lot of water, and it's actually named for that river, right? So you might need to just decide what the limited resource is in the area that you're going to. You know, it's like if you try to go to Iowa and you say, I'm going to hunt corn, because there... it can get hard. We've been there, done that, right?
Because there's a cornfield here, and there's a cornfield a quarter mile there, and there's one a half mile over there.
Everywhere.
And so, limited resources are important. We actually met a guy on a piece of public in Texas and talked to him for a while, and it kind of, you know, it's not that we hadn't thought about this before, maybe, but like he kind of reiterated last year that, you know, he was hunting, the way he was hunting was based off limited resource, and it was just like, kind of one of those things where we're like, you know what, we hadn't thought about this in a while, but this is definitely a point. But you definitely want to consider those things, because when there is a resource that deer need, and so like for instance in your Mississippi example, because of the flood, like if you're near floodplain stuff, you may not have cover, because when it floods there for long periods of time, it doesn't give greenbrier and stuff an opportunity to grow up, or forbs, or, you know, giant ragweed or whatever. So there's not a lot of cover potentially. So if you can find, like, you know, this is something we had in Arkansas last year, but you find these little ridges that are like a few feet taller than the rest of the stuff around them, and they're just dry enough that it holds cover, and little oak trees grow up and create little brushy spots and stuff. That would be something, you know, that you would look for in Mississippi, not water, right?
You know, my most favorite limited resource to hunt is does.
Yeah.
Then you have to hunt where the does want to be. But, you know, you think about that, it doesn't always have to be food, water, or shelter, you know, like – bucks are going to go where the does are, and honestly, it's going to start like mid-October on, even, you know, depending on where you're at in the country, it can be heavier or lighter, but like, dude, it's a lot of fun to go to these states when there's some sort of a rut going on where, you know, maybe it's, here's what happens, guys, if you're looking at states that have low deer densities, it's not that there are areas where the deer are literally one deer per 100 acres. There will be 1,000 acres, and all the deer are living in 10 to 15 acres. So what ends up happening is bucks jump from pocket to pocket, and it makes it to where the bucks are super visible and fun to hunt. So just a little interjection there, like if you can find a place where the does or the limited resources, man, it's a good way to find bucks on their feet.
Yeah, and so in those, in that scenario, a couple things you might want to look for would be a pinch point or some sort of travel route or bottleneck or however you want to call it, but like something that you can ambush a buck in without messing up the doe pocket, right? So on one side or the other of a certain doe family group, it's bedding in an area or hanging out in an area, or even just, you can flat out just be in between by a half mile, a couple of doe bedding areas, and just, you won't see many deer, but you're going to, you know, have a shot to shoot.
Yeah.
Cause those bucks, especially in like open country in the rut, like they're going to follow shelter belts and stuff like that, you know? So they're going to give you shots.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
Tyler, how many times have Acorns helped you when it comes to deer hunting?
Man, that's a tough question.
I mean, give me a percentage, maybe. It might be hard to give
me a number.
I
mean, I would say that generally speaking, it's hard to really narrow down and kill a deer off of Acorns.
That's how I think, too. And I think a lot of people travel with the idea of going to hunt Acorns because it's the most common natural food source that people think of in the fall, right? Now, deer eat all kinds of stuff, but I think about Arkansas this year when you're talking about native foods and food being a limited resource a lot of times. All of a sudden, there's this huge just flood, inundation of acorns coming from the trees, and they stay on the ground for a long time. You can't figure out a way to pinpoint anything. So it's almost like you have to wipe the slate clean and say you're not going to focus on that. I just think that if we're thinking about traveling to hunt, it might be worth mentioning that, like, deer do eat them, right? But, man, it is just really hard to pinpoint, like, the tree.
Yeah.
Because it's never the tree.
No, it's really not. That's what one thing that makes it tough. I think one way that we like to hunt acorns would be late season in East Texas with like willow and swamp oaks, or water oaks, as you might call them. Those are going to be really heavily, tannin infused, and they're going to break down over the course of some time. And they really, become a decent food source later in the season, especially for hogs, which I know we're talking mostly deer right now, but you know, they're fun to shoot too. So
I'm ready to shoot another one.
I'm telling you, if you're hunting, dude, if you're hunting a willow oak or a swamp oak, and it's been putting off, and you're in a pretty good spot in East Texas in December, I mean, there's a, you got a good chance of seeing some hogs, man.
Yeah,
I mean, you'll see, and you'll see what they root around. Wood ducks,
they'll climb up in around there and eat.
Like, young, dude, weird, man.
It is. It's cool to see a duck just walk around on the ground.
Yeah, but you know, as far as like the native, more, not necessarily, I guess, native, but more like wild foods stuff, the stuff that grows up pretty naturally, I think it's important to know and to get past the oaks thing. The oaks thing is just, it's just general knowledge that doesn't help you much, in my opinion. And you
it
just
could
hear
kill
it.
You a deer.
It could,
if
man.
That's your goal, and you want to go, like, you just want to go shoot a doe or a buck or a giant buck.
Yeah,
it could kill you a deer.
It's just not as helpful as other things, in my opinion. It's just, but it's a layup for guys to talk about because you're looking at a 60-foot plant, you know what I mean? So it's easy for guys to identify in the woods. It's not as easy for to identify jewel weed as you're walking through the middle of a low spot in the woods and understand that deer eating that, you know, in the summer, and therefore, you know, whatever. But obviously you can't hunt them in the summer, but I'm just making that as an example. Those smaller plants are harder to identify sometimes for guys. But the thing, here's the thing is, you know, you shot the meat buck. We've talked about it several times, but Chinese privet grows a berry that's like a little small blueberry, and you cut his stomach open after you when you gutted him, and it was just full of those berries. You know, that was January 1. Mm-hmm. So killing a buck on public in January 1 in Texas with privet that was being the main food source probably in his gut, they're gonna eat Japanese honeysuckle. They're going to use that stuff, both privet and honeysuckle, as cover as well. So it's a multifaceted thing that's also evergreen. So it's cover in January, right? Mm-hmm. These are things that are helpful to know instead of just knowing oaks, mm-hmm. red and white. You know what I mean?
Or so, knowing that after a storm comes through, it's going to blow down hackberries. Mm-hmm. And those deer are going to go to those treetops and eat.
Yeah.
You know, like there's little things like that you can figure out and know. Now, this might be getting kind of far from the whole, like, how to find a place to hunt and travel to hunt them. But, like, if you can put that stuff together locally, that brush paints a broad stroke. Mm-hmm. You can find other stuff. And I've been doing Sudoku some whenever I'm sitting around early in the waiting on deer or whatever, you know, first get there. And it's kind of like you're flexing and working out your creativity just a little mm-hmm. bit. You know, if you can learn how to creatively find and kill deer locally, being creative on the road
is
huge, man.
That's a huge one,
like,
man.
Look at the Oklahoma buck from 2021, mm-hmm. right? We were in there chasing deer around like you would normally with rattling antlers and stuff. And just so happened to see a spot where deer were going and drinking out of a cattle trough and maybe eating algae while they were there, and set up and found a way to kill a deer in a cattle pen, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
8 foot up in a little tiny tree.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I'm not boasting about this because it was providential, as they would say, in happening, right? Because it was crazy. But you have to, you know, you have to understand that there is some level of work put into what we do as well.
Right? We're talking about how to travel and hunt, mm-hmm. and creative thought is a hard thought, but it like you can say, you know, you can do the whole chest beating and do your sit ups and run every day and this and that. But at the end of the day, we are killing deer in a pretty out of shape fashion sometimes. By working our minds out, you know what I mean? And it's not easy work. I promise you, to create a song out of midair is not always easy. Mm-hmm. To create a way to kill a deer is not out of thin air is not always easy, because if it was easy, there would be a lot of guys doing it. It's just like separating yourself by walking a mile back into the woods and trying to kill a deer, or walking 8 miles back mm-hmm. in the woods trying to kill an elk. That is a hard thing to do. Not many guys are willing to do it, and you separate yourself. It's the same thing with creative thought. And it is something that can be worked out, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can write a song so much easier right now than I could when I was 20 years old. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Just plain and simple, because I've done it a bunch.
And you know what else helps you write songs, Tyler? Life experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
So not to deviate from the creativity thing, but the more you do this, the better you're going to get at it.
You have more things in your mind that can connect.
Yep.
You have more experiences that can connect. Oh, I remember that time or whatever, mm-hmm. right? And all of a sudden, your gut instinct is not really a gut instinct. It's more of, I feel this way. You maybe don't perceive it, but you know that you feel this way in your gut. So you do it, and it works out for you. You just don't realize that 8 years ago, you were walking along, and something hit you, and you're like, man, I saw that deer do that. And that, mm-hmm. you know, and it just all comes together because of that life experience. So, and that is how you travel to kill deer.
Boom. That's how you do it.
That's plain and simple. But if you go starting to travel to kill deer this year, just don't expect to kill one necessarily. I mean, go out there and try to make it happen, but don't get frustrated and quit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you can go and do this, but you're going to have to pay some dues on this stuff a little bit. But it's awesome. It's super rewarding, and it is challenging in its mm-hmm. own, in its own manner. So, but you know, those are definitely some of the things that you want to consider. I think we're going to talk about a few scenarios real quick, and kind of give just our basic thoughts on what we would do.
So before we get into scenarios, I just had a thought.
Okay.
I don't know where it was supposed to go, but we should have talked about it. Giving yourself ample time while you're on one of these trips.
Yeah.
Is an important thing. Mm-hmm. And it probably doesn't fit in scenarios. That's why I wanted to say it now. But don't give yourself 4 days and expect to kill a deer.
Yeah.
You could. I mean, you shot a deer on day two more than once this year, I think. Shot deer on day one, hit a deer on day two. I do know that.
Well,
just for the quick thought here.
In South Dakota, it was evening two of hunting.
Yeah.
But we had been there 3 days.
Yeah. But still early.
Yeah.
Within the 4 day parameter.
Sure.
But the point here is, like, if you have to go figure some stuff out, give yourself some time to do it, because I'm the guy to attest to that. I shoot deer on the last day often, you know, like it takes a while sometimes to figure things out. So give yourself plenty of time.
And a week is like, it's a good, I know it's hard for a lot of dudes to do, but here's the thing. If you're taking a vacation and you can take 5 days and you have like eight, you know what I mean, to hunt there. So it's, you know, if this is what you want to do, man, give yourself that time to figure it out. And if you want to come home early, then you probably shouldn't, but do it, you know, and then go back for another trip for 5 days or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I did in Iowa. We went for 7 days in 2019, and we just hopped around. We're trying to figure things out. We struggled. We had some close encounters. We figured stuff out in the last, like, 2 days. We squeezed in on this buck, messed it up on the last day actually calling him in by kind of fixing our tree up and getting up the tree and stuff. And he bumped at like 30 yards. We didn't even see him until you saw him standing there. I was like putting on my last jacket.
Yeah, the snowman suit.
Yep. And that sucker.
Needed
you're
that
like,
day
don't
too.
Move. And I was like, I look over and this deer's running off. I was like, oh my goodness. This is the one we came in, we had bedded him.
The buck.
Oh, it was the buck. And he was bedding in the same spot every day. Anyway, we almost killed a 7-point that night too. I passed him. Mm-hmm. Remember that?
Yeah, you could have smoked him.
We were in a good spot.
I wanted you to shoot him bad.
I did too, dude. You don't even know.
I'm glad you didn't, though.
I am too, because I ended up shooting a good buck. But I had to go back. The point is, I went back another time, and like on the third day, I think, is when I killed that. Maybe, yeah, it was the third or fourth day that I killed that buck. So it still took 11 days or whatever to kill a deer of hunting time in a new state. But, you know, if you leave out on a trip because it's not working out for you or whatever, and you do come back, you have an advantage because you've been there before. Mm-hmm. So it helps you to kill deer in that, you know, shorter window.
Maybe there's a big point there too of, like, you know, if you're heading to a place you've never been before, think about taking two trips and making them a little shorter, as long as it's not a huge drive.
Don't wuss out. You know what I mean? Like, don't come back early or say I'm going to do two trips and then not do the second trip.
And also within the hunt, don't wuss out, where I've seen guys do this where you try real hard for 3 days and you're like, I'm beat. I'm just going to kind of take it easy these last two and maybe I'll see a deer. You know, like if you're there, give it y'all.
Take a nap if you need to or whatever and then get back after it. But I'll see this thing too where like dudes will, you know, go to plan on taking a second trip and they'll get home and their wife doesn't really want them to go and they, you know, are got a bunch going on or whatever, and they just don't do it, and you're just wasting your out-of-state money at that point.
That's,
you know,
right. So giving that money to them departments.
Mm-hmm.
Free tags. All right, let's
tax,
get
you said?
Yeah. The Scenarios, is that what that is?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
I seen a Rio or two this year.
I didn't. Dang gummit. Didn't see no Rios.
I saw Greg smoke one.
Oh.
That video will be out on the Element Channel next spring.
One of these days.
Be ready for that.
Yeah.
All right. Top scenarios is the word I was making fun of there.
Mm-hmm.
This is your vision, so you take off with this.
Okay, perfect. I'm going to ask you.
Okay, good.
If you were going to Kentucky in the early season.
Oh, gosh. I didn't realize that.
What would you do, man? Don't try not to highlight spots too much, because people absolutely hate when you do that.
I can't, because I've
only it helps people.
Been to, like, Louisville, and that's it.
Yeah.
Which is a word. The best way to say that word is to try not to say it. Louisville.
Just get a biscuit in your mouth and just say it.
I would call my friend Michael Stoll, because he has some hunting experience in the state, first off, would be a thing. It's always good to use your resources, people you know. Ask him where he went and don't go there, because he didn't see any deer. We've talked about it quite a bit. I would always think about soybeans, because that's the thing you do in the early season in ag country, is hunt near soybeans. And I'd probably try to overlay that with some public ground that's accessible near or on those soybean fields. It being the East and being kind of a deer state, if I wasn't a big budget guy, I probably wouldn't mess with trying to get a hold of landowners because there's a decent amount of leasing and stuff going on there. I probably just would spend my time doing something else, finding places to hunt on public ground. Or if I wanted to go there and had a little budget, it's a state where if you can pay for some access, you can kill a big deer.
Mm-hmm.
You're not messing around. Mm-hmm. You're not just
soybean
trying,
fed.
Yeah.
High protein fed deer.
So I would probably, for one thing, narrow it down to some of the country that's the river type stuff. I wouldn't hunt in the hills in early season especially. So that's kind of my thoughts on that.
You know, you mentioned this earlier, but there's a lot of logistics to traveling that you got to think about. Bugs this time of year in Kentucky are going to be thick. So, and if you're hunting river country, mosquitoes. So, you know, just be prepared for that kind of stuff.
Also,
I would say get a hotel.
The next thing. At least don't give yourself a reprieve from those bugs if you can. I mean, gosh, man, a really cheap motel is worth a whole lot.
It's way better than a tent
in the air conditioner.
Dude, we did Nebraska. The first year I did Nebraska in 2019, I camped in a tiny little two-man that's basically put your gear in here. Mosquitoes were so bad. I've never been to a place the mosquitoes were worse. And I've been in Nebraska, and it wasn't that bad again. It was just a bad, bad year. Lots of rain that year. And I wasn't getting showers, and it was just a beat down, dude. And I had two ticks like in my sock line the last day when I went to go, and one of them things I pulled it out for like, I'm talking, it was like nearly a half year that thing hurt.
That's not good.
It was bad, dude.
Yucky.
So it was just, you know, it was rough. I think if I'd have had a hotel, it'd be a lot better. But you know, just logistically, we should go after these scenarios. We should maybe talk just real briefly about some of the things that we kind of tend to think about that are not just the hunting aspect, but the things that
outside
make the hunt
the
go
box.
Better. Yeah.
All right, Tyler, I'm going to play the reverse Uno on you here. October in North Dakota. What's your scenario for that hunt?
I think, you know, you can look at both. Pretty much you look at the east side and the west side of the state, and they're kind of a little bit different. And that's kind of how you would separate.
That's
how
a lot of states in the U.S. are, not just the western stuff. But a lot of states throughout the U.S., the west and the east is a little different. Illinois and maybe Ohio would be some of the ones I would think of are a little bit different. It's more north and south are the difference. Mm-hmm. But, like, a lot of the states are that way.
Illinois is a long north and south state.
It is, man. You used to, like, Eric, what's Illinois, like 3 hours wide and 6 hours long or something like that? When you talk about driving full speeds, it's crazy.
So for Jenny, it's like 7 and 4 for sure.
Depends on if you have to stop and let the transmission cool down or not.
I would think that's kind of how you look at that state. And like you're saying, a lot of states probably. And then once you decide which you're going to, I think you're generally going to hunt in a pretty similar way. because I think that you're going to have, I would think in October, you're going to be probably a little more corn-based than bean-based. Alfalfa would be a thing. And so I would look at corn and alfalfa as being kind of my main food sources. And I'd probably still hunt an early season pattern unless it was just the very, very last of October. I might get into some rut scenarios, but I would probably base that off of what I'm seeing on those ag fields before I go jump into like a pinch point or something like that way off of an ag field. So I would try to pattern deer still like early season and, you know, take some clothes because it's probably going to – you got a chance of hitting a cold front that also could potentially kind of kickstart the rut a little bit. So, but there is a thing where like in South Dakota a couple of years ago, you grunted in a deer on October 4th, you know, a buck that inquisitive kind of maybe just lower density deer herd wants that buck wants to know, like, is there actually a rut fest going on over
also
here?
Also low pressure.
Yeah.
Like there, dude, you grunt at a deer in East Texas, there's a good chance it runs away.
Yeah.
Up there, that deer may have not ever, like, experienced hunting pressure.
Yeah.
So he's like, why is there a deer grunting over there? And it might not be that you fooled him, but you did something good enough to get a shot, you know? So there's that. How much attention are you going to pay to buck sign up there?
Like rubs and stuff, you're saying? I don't know, man. If it was a big, big scrape, I would probably hang a camera if I could. I don't know what the laws are. I have to look those up. If I could hang a camera up there, I probably would. Another thing to think about is North Dakota may not get the leasing pressure. So if you could lease some property up there, man, that would probably – or just get permission, because I know there's that chance up there too in that rural country. But that could really help you, because most of the ag is going to be on private. And so that would really help you get to deer that are, like you said, unpressured. And, I mean, dude, they say don't do it, but, I mean – on private in North Dakota, killing a deer on a field edge would be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Come on out. Walk down the edge of this field. Just like TV in the 90s,
That's
you know?
That's it, man.
I mean,
it would be cool.
Some things to think about. I'm probably not paying a ton of attention to the buck sign unless it's a big scrape or a scrape that sets up in a place that I really like. Mm-hmm. Like, say, 300 yards off of a field edge on some public coming out of, like, a deep draw or something like that.
All right. The next one, I suppose this is my scenario potentially for the year. Rut in Iowa. I'm just going to tell y'all my plan because I'm doing this right now. I don't know if I've drawn the tag yet or not, just to be clear.
Did you plan for it?
I did.
Good.
So I am going to do my best to be hunting private land in Iowa, and here's why. It already costs you a bunch to just get in that game, and you have a lot of years in it. And there is, in my opinion, not a better state to hunt the biggest deer of your life in. Mm-hmm. And guess what? He don't live on public land. He lives on private land, and he lives and operates on private land. So if you want to go to Iowa and kill a really big deer, private land's the way to do it. So I'm going to do my best. Pretty much everywhere, yeah. Now, there's some states, for sure, and we've killed some big deer on public, but, like, you know, hunting private's a great thing to do. So when you get a chance to do it, Iowa's the place, right?
It is.
So I'm going to try to be hunting some private ground. And
How much attention are you going to pay to buck sign? Same question.
Not a lot. And hopefully this is more of a process instead of like a trip. I would like to go hang cameras on some private ground that I'll have permission on and kind of do the thing, if you know what that means. Like have a good idea, keeping tabs on the property and have a good idea what bucks live there. I'm going to hunt this thing in the rut. So if you were the guy who wanted to hunt go hunt public in Iowa, you would potentially try to hunt the shoulders of the rut to avoid the big pressure. Because, I mean,
I shot my deer on the 21st.
The 21st, and he was a rut rager.
He's
rut rager.
Motorcycle man.
Yeah. Because you did that year. We hunted some private.
Yep.
But we were hunting public too while we were there. There was a lake that we hunted that we saw one tiny buck on public. We saw a big deer on private.
We only walked, you know, through every single cuckabarrow that in the whole
ruined some jackets
region.
It was bad.
I need to go watch that hunt. That was fun.
That was fun, man. It was a fun right there for sure.
That was.
But if you were going to go hunt public ground, you might think about hunting like October 25th through November 2nd, or coming back November 8th through the 15th, or something like that, because that public ground gets a ton of pressure during the highest peaks of the rut.
Yep.
However, I'm going to hunt private, hopefully. I'm not crossing off public by any means, and I'm going to run cameras, and I'm going to hunt pinch points and places where bucks will cruise by. And potentially food sources, if that is the thing.
If you see a big old scrape, are you going to set up a camera over it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Are you going to hunt it?
Depends on what the camera's saying.
So you're going to for sure see what the camera says first?
No, yeah. It depends on how I feel about other stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'll hunt that scrape, but if I know that the deer pour into the backside of this field every night, I'm just going to go hunt there. as opposed to like hoping they come to the scrape.
Yes, sir.
You know, like you go with the smartest, most common sense thing.
If you've ever watched Midwest Whitetail, they do kill them on field edges.
That's right. Bill Winky will sit there in his redneck and shoot a giant, and that's what he does.
Massive.
You know,
most massive.
All right, Tyler.
Yeah,
Rutney's, Texas. We're both going to be doing that this year.
Yeah, I hope so.
And the Rutney's, Texas is kind of a misnomer because we had a fawn in my parents' yard that if you backdate, assuming that fawn was at least a week old, and it looked to be at least that old, if you backdate it, that doe got bred October 15th-ish. And then Greg and Eric both shot deer in December this year on Texas Public that were doing Rutty-type stuff.
Yeah, Eric's deer was shredding the old cedar pine.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, the cedar pine shredding, as they say. So, and we have pictures of one of the biggest deer we've ever seen in East Texas with his nose buried up in a doe's hiney on February 3rd or something like that.
22nd
of February?
I need to go check that.
Those antlers
sure.
are about to fall off.
I'm telling you, dude.
It's wild, man. So what we're trying to say is like...
Also... On the same day that Eric killed, didn't you have a rut raging fest come through? Or was that a different day?
That was a different day. It was 3 days before.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. I guess technically in November, but last day pretty much.
Yeah, Michael had a little rut rage down where he was that day.
With a spike?
Yeah. He was cruising. he was cruising. That one's
he
not
was.
Charging, by
he
the way.
He was cruising, man.
No, it didn't matter that much because we're almost done. But what we're trying to say is that East Texas has a very drawn-out rut.
Yep.
So hunting very, like, rutty stuff is kind of tough sometimes. However, it's always good to be in a pinch point, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you can't just say, this is a pinch point, and I'm just going to hunt it without question because you might not see anything.
Yeah.
It's not like a place where you go out west or you go to the heartland and – all of a sudden, it's like, I want to hunt this pinch point because there's going to be seven deer go by here today. You know, yeah. It's just different than that.
I think you kind of go back to what you were talking about as one of your favorite limited resources earlier, and that's does.
Mm-hmm.
And so hunting in areas that does frequent a lot, and that's mm-hmm. where Eric killed. That's where me and Spike were when I filmed him. Mm-hmm. That's where, well, Greg was in a pretty much a pinch point in between.
And it worked, bedding. But we had data that – made him feel pretty good about that, too.
For sure.
So that helps.
You when you had that rut raging thing happen, that was also a doe, very doe-heavy area back in there.
And a pinch point. So one of the things you can do in a place with lower deer densities or higher pressure is put as many odds in your favor as you possibly can.
Yeah.
You know, that place in general has a lot of deer, has really low hunting pressure.
Well, we talk about that a lot.
Has pinch points, creek crossings, yada, yada.
That's the idea is, like, the more favorable – things that you have, like different ideas that you have in a particular spot, the more confidence you're going to have going mm-hmm. into that spot. The more confidence you have, the more you pay attention, as you mentioned before in mm-hmm. other podcasts. And the more you pay attention, the more you see a deer coming or a deer that you can call to before he gets out of sight. And then you call to him and you kill the deer. And it's just, it makes success, you know? Mm-hmm. So try to put as many things in your favor as possible. You don't want to just hunt a pinch point. You want to hunt a pinch point because there's an ag field south of you and there's doe bedding to the north and you have a southeast wind and you can barely get away with it. The deer think they're bulletproof coming down into that ag field. Mm-hmm. There's got to be like multiple reasons that you want to hunt this place. And sometimes I do the best I can. And I still don't have very many reasons and I don't have a lot of confidence. And that's just the way it is when you only have limited public ground when you go out of state to in your area to get on. So, mm-hmm. but I mean, as far as hunting the rut in East Texas, my main thing probably is just being where the does are at in most scenarios and hoping that things break loose and they come flying by you and stop for a second.
Bow in hand a lot of times.
Yeah.
Like, if don't put it on a hanger that's hard to get it off of
because mm-hmm.
things happen quick.
Now, if you're going to hunt late season in Texas, I know you killed the old meat buck we talked about earlier in late season. What would you be thinking?
Food sources. It would be one of my number ones, especially in the evening. So, you know, so you think about bed to feed, kind of like you do early season, but different because there's less cover in the woods. And the deer are sometimes more pressured by the time late season rolls around. So I like hunting something that's near bedding in the mornings because those deer are going to leave those food sources and come bed, of course. This is kind of, you know, pretty common knowledge, but it's also still something to consider. That's how I killed that meat buck. He'd been eating, and I watched him bed, and then he came back out again. I grunted at him, and I was doing everything I could to kill it here.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you kind of turn that around on his head, and in the evenings, I'm going to get pretty close to that bedding, hoping that those deer get on their feet before shooting light's over. But still, like I was talking about earlier, the rut extends a lot. Ain't ever a bad time to be in a pinch point in East Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, if it's December 28th and it's a pretty good, cool day, I mean, there's a decent chance you have a buck cruise by.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Also, a good chance one doesn't come by, too. So, you know, manage expectations.
That's exactly right. For sure, man.
Tyler,
so,
I'm glad you put this on the list. Good. Late season in Michigan.
Don't go. For sure. No. If you have a chance to hunt, I'd bundle up and go do it, man. But, you know, I think you and I have been, you know, blessed with the opportunity to hang out with old Mark Kenyon a few times the last year or so. He's from Michigan, and he kind of gives us some ideas of what it's like up there. And I think that if I was to go late season in Michigan, I didn't have a place to hunt, so I was going to be on public, I would assume – my expectations would be that there would be not many bucks left on the public land. So I would be very particular, and I would not go hunting unless I had this scenario or something that made me feel confident. But this is a particular scenario where, say you have a piece of public that spans between two private places that have to have cover. And I think at least one of them needs to have a late season food source of some sort. So an ag food source that hasn't been chewed up too bad. So maybe beans or maybe, I don't know, maybe some sort of green or something like that, you know, is the only food in the area. But you want to make sure, or if there's corn, you know, that's been left standing or something for some reason. Say it's a managed place or whatever. But anywhere up north, I think this scenario, but especially in Michigan where there's high-pressure hunters, you're going to need cover that the deer can escape to onto private from the public that's getting pressured really hard, and that they can live on that cover during the year, and that they also would have a reason to come across that public again to get to. And I would hunt very close to that private boundary for sure. So kind of my thoughts, you know, anywhere up north, I think you're going to want to, if you do have, like, say you have private, I would definitely hunt between bedding. It's just like very much like early season, between bedding and that late season food source. And I would hunt cold fronts because I want to, because it's going to be freezing cold, right? But because that's going to probably force some of the bigger bucks out of their bed. And I think, from what I understand, it can be a very successful time of year. But I kind of want to reiterate your point that not in Michigan maybe, but in other states south of there, say, you still stand a chance of finding a buck that's checking scrapes or checking does in late December. And I've seen it. I've killed a deer that way before.
They don't drop those antlers till February, March.
Yeah.
So, like, that just because the does aren't in doesn't mean those bucks aren't thinking about it. I mean, you watch Bill Winkie, when he's got a field of does and it's December 18th. That buck comes out and he's usually kind of looking at them, thinking about them, or smelling them.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to eat some while he's there too.
Yeah.
But he's going to mess with them a little bit.
Yeah. So that kind of wraps up. We could do scenarios all day, and I could talk about this stuff all day, but it kind of wraps up our ideas on how to find new places to hunt, how to scout them, how to hunt them, and what you might do in some scenarios. If you have any questions or want us to address something, one thing you can do is you can actually send us a video, 60 seconds or less, preferably 15 seconds or so, a selfie-style video on your phone. Email it to theelementwild@gmail.com or just email it to us in one way or another. Get it to us in email. And we are going to do some videos with some Q&A. We're going to answer y'all's questions. We're going to put your face on the video, so it'll be pretty cool. You can do that. Make sure that if you haven't watched all 5 Buck Truck episodes that are out so far, you go do that on the Meat Eater YouTube channel or on the website, themeateater.com. The last one was Oklahoma, and it was pretty awesome. You shot a great buck there.
Thanks, man.
And you know, this is your classic kind of funnily rut hunt, you know. And so some of the things that we have figured out and we talked about today that you used on that trip. So anyway, appreciate you guys watching. If you're watching through YouTube, if you're listening, appreciate you listening. And remember, this is your element.
Living it.
Hey guys, turkey season is in full swing right now, and if you are planning on getting after it, make sure to pick up some Meat Eater Phelps turkey calls to stuff into the old turkey vest or into your fanny pack right now. I carry a few different things. I like to use mouth calls, and I like to use pot calls. Mouth calls or diaphragms, I like them because it gives you hand-free calling, meaning when you're working a bird up close, you can have your gun on your knee, finger on the trigger, ready to roll, and still be making turkey sounds. I like pot calls. I just like pot calls. I enjoy calling with a pot call. Whatever direction you go, including a box call, which I don't personally use too much, but they're fun and great, and I started out with them. Yanni, on the other hand, one of my main turkey hunting buddies, he loves box calls. And what's funny is I'll now and then look to him and give him the look that means get out your box call and find us a turkey. So it's not that I don't like them. I just have Yanni use his. Then I don't have to carry it. Go to Phelps Game Calls. Get calls that are made in the USA and get calls that'll get them close. Find yours at PhelpsGameCalls.com today.